to have allies against the humans. They are near to breaking free, you know. Did you see the news reports?
He eyed Braid, who, as usual, strode on ahead of us and barely paid any attention to our conversation. The humans are contained, Hesho, Morimer said. This little blip is nothing to be worried about. I'm sure it will be dealt with soon.
My duty and my burden is to worry about the worst possibilities.
As we reached the now familiar intersection with the usual guard and the pathway to engineering, I split off from the others, waving them onward. Gotta hit the head, I told them, then stepped up to the guard. The Krell twitched her fingers in a sign of annoyance, but called for a guide drone to accompany me to the restroom. I thought through my plan once again. I'd spent all night practicing it with Embot. I wasn't worried about being tired from lack of sleep. My nervous energy probably could have powered half of Starsight. The guide drone led me to the restroom, then again waited as I entered one of the stalls. I immediately sat and put the backpack on my lap, then quietly slid open the zipper. My hands, having performed this exact sequence 100 times in a row last night, pulled out my drone, then took out the security module. I screwed it on with a quiet click that I hoped wasn't too audible. A flip of a switch left the drone hanging in the air as I quickly did my business in the stall so as to not sound suspicious. Then I squeezed around the side of the stall, leaving the drone hovering there. I held up one finger, then two, then three. The drone vanished, activating its camouflage. Then I tapped my bracelet, checking to make sure the drone and I could communicate. It responded by sending me a message in DDF flight code that my bracelet tapped out on my skin. All systems functioning. The mission was a go. The weights and measures as shielding prevented me from contacting Embot on the outside, but as we had hoped, I could still communicate with someone inside, such as the drone. I shouldered my pack and stepped out, then had an immediate regret. The destructor pistol. Scud. I'd meant to detach it and put it in my backpack in case I needed it. Too late now. It was safely and uselessly strapped to the back of the drone. Good luck, little guy, I thought, washing my hands. A part of me kept expecting the security drone to suddenly raise an alarm, but it remained silent. I followed my guide from the restroom, leaving my secret spy behind, ready to slip out and sneak to the engine room. I reached the jump room and settled down with the others. Then I waited. And waited some more. Was it taking an unusually long amount of time for us to disengage from the docks and take off? Had I already been discovered? Finally, the weights and measures undocked and began to move out into space. Pilots! Winzik's voice said over the comm, making me jump practically to the ceiling. I wanted to let you know that today's training is particularly important. My, my. We bear a number of important officials from the Superiority government who have come to watch your progress. As a favor to me, I'd like you to fly your best and impress them. Today? Of all days, today was the day that extra observers came on the ship to watch? I almost contacted my drone and told it to abort. But no, I was committed. I waited in silence as we got a safe distance from Starsight, and then a scream sounded in my mind, and we entered the nowhere. I didn't have much opportunity to worry about the drone and its mission during training that day. I shot through space, pursued by a swarm of self-propelled imitation boulders. Braid flew close at my wing, and together we tried to dart toward the Delver maze. But the Embers were ready for that. Another group of them broke off the outside of the maze and streamed toward us. Veer pattern, I said, cutting right. I spun my starfighter, boosting. That shot me to the side, though my momentum still carried me forward as well. My proximity sensor showed that Braid, instead of following my orders, barreled toward the new set of Embers. I growled, hitting the private line. Braid, follow orders. I can take these Embers, she said. No doubt that you can, but can you follow orders? She continued toward the embers. Then, just before engaging them, she veered off and broke away, boosting toward me. I let out a breath I hadn't realized I'd been holding. All right, I said. Veer pattern, cutting right. I turned us around in a wide sweep, away from the embers. Braid followed, and together we wove around as I had ordered. All right, I said, coming in at a better angle. Let loose. Really? She asked. I'll follow your lead. I sensed an eagerness to her as she boosted ahead of me. The embers were predictable in how they would try to smash into us, so the way we had cut around had bunched them all up in front of us. Braid had little trouble blasting a group of them away. I, in turn, shot the one that drew too close to her. We both took some debris on our shields, but emerged mostly unscathed as we dove between the two advancing packs of embers. These, in their eagerness to hit us, began crashing into one another. We emerged as a good dozen of the enemy crashed together in a sequence of fiery deaths behind us. That, Braid said as we boosted on toward the maze, was extremely satisfying. Once in a while, I know what I'm talking about. Yeah, well, I don't listen to you because of that. Why, then? You don't talk to me like the others, she said. You didn't even ask me about that planet of wild humans. I'm sure you saw the news reports. Everyone's scared of them right now. Everyone looks at me, even more than they used to. They tell me they know I'm not like those dangerous ones. But still, they look at me. Scud, there's an entire planet where we won't treat you like that, Braid. I almost told her right then, but forced myself to hold back. It didn't feel like the right time. To me, I said, you're just a member of my flight. Yeah, she said. I like that. I'd suspected she would. The two of us veered down near the maze. Today's training was to fight through the embers, then do maze runs, like we'd need to do if fighting a real Delver. We drew close to our section of the maze, the sheer metallic surface punctured by tunnel entrances. In the near distance, three other fighters came in close, Vapor, Hesho, and Morimer. Let's take that one, I said, tapping my display, which would highlight the indicated point on Braid's own display. Roger, she said. I made the move, then was shocked as my proximity alarm went crazy. I veered out of the way, boosting to the side as a pair of embers suddenly accelerated from the surface at explosive speeds, nearly colliding with my ship. They'd never moved that fast before. I cursed, reorienting myself as the ones chasing me picked up speed too. I had to boost to Mag 4, an insane speed for dogfighting, to stay ahead of them. What is this? Braid said over the comm. Flight command, what are you doing? I narrowly avoided another pair of embers. I had to speed up again, but another group approaching turned and began smashing against one another. What, in the stars? They're trying to get me to smash into their debris, I realized. And their high speed made me boost faster. It was nearly impossible to dogfight at such speeds. There just wasn't enough time to react. But embers didn't need to care about that. They were disposable, while we were not. What followed was some of the most frantic piloting I'd done in weeks. Wave sequence, I said to Braid, and she fell right on my wing as we ducked and wove among the embers. Scud! There suddenly seemed to be hundreds of them, all focusing on us, ignoring other pilots. I jerked to the side as two embers collided right near me, then braced myself as debris flashed across my shield, wearing it down. Another ember nearly hit me, and I dodged belatedly. If it had been on target, I'd have been smashed. I felt like a solitary sparrow among an entire flock of hungry hawks. I swooped and wove, spun and dodged, trying to make sense of the chaos. My shield is down, Braid said with a grunt. Scud. Scud, 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 scud. She'd veered off from me, so I spun around, then boosted after her. See that large ember coming at you from just below your 270? Spear it with your light lance. But just do it, Braid, I said. I barely got out of the way as the ember flew past us at a horrific speed. Fortunately, as I'd suggested, Braid shot her light lance at it and hit the thing in the center with her glowing rope. The momentum of the large stone yanked her after it, and right out of the path of several other embers, which smashed together. I swung around and chased her, accelerating so hard my grav caps got overwhelmed and I slammed back in my seat. I barely managed to keep pace, as I had to shoot down an ember that tried to collide with Braid, then swoop in beside her to shield her from the debris. My shield crackled, and my ship shook. Ahead, the large ember we'd been trailing cleared us a path before finally slowing, as if its pilot had realized what we were doing. "Up and over," I shouted, dodging upward. Braid let go just as another large ember smashed into the one we'd been following. She barely dodged a large chunk ejected from the collision, but together the two of us boosted free of the mess. Our incredible speed carried us far beyond the melee in seconds.
"That," Braid said. "That was close."
She actually seemed shaken for once. "Flight command," I said, hitting the comm button. "What in the stars was that?"
"I am sorry, Alanique of the Urdale,"
Winzik replied personally, which was uncommon.
"Occasionally, the embers have been observed engaging in extremely aggressive behavior like this. We are trying new boosters on our drones to match it."
"You could have warned us," I snapped.
"Very sorry," Winzik said. "Please do not be offended. Braid, thank you. You have made a very impressive showing for the officials here."
So Winzik was showing off his pet human, was he? He could have gotten her and me killed. Braid didn't seem to care. With this new batch of embers disposed of, she spun back around toward the maze itself. I boosted after her. A second later, we darted through one of the openings, entering the tunnel. It seemed quieter inside. That was silly, of course. Space was always silent. Sure, I could set my ship to simulate explosions and vibrations to give me non-visual cues, but no atmosphere means no compression waves, and no compression waves means no sound. That normally felt right to me. Soaring through the void was supposed to be silent. The darkness was so empty, so awesome, so vast that it should smother all sound. These tunnels inside the maze felt more intimate. I felt like I should hear clanks, drips of water, or at least distant screeching as gears ground together. Here, the silence was creepy. My floods illuminated Braid's ship, flying just ahead of me. She slowed to an uncharacteristically careful speed, inching along the corridor.
"Do you see that opening ahead?" she asked.
"Yes," I replied. Both of us seeing it confirmed it was real, though openings like the one ahead almost always were. It was the things the holograms covered up that could get confusing. We crept into the room beyond, which was one of the spaces that felt like it was submerged. There were even holographic fish swarming around in schools, and some dark thing in the corner that bore multiple tentacles. I'd been in this room several times before. They were starting to repeat. The illusions on our canopies were superiority tech, bounded by the limitations of their programming. The true Delver maze would be more erratic. Pilots who had entered and escaped reported a different setting to each room, with surprises around every corner. I asked Braid what she was seeing, as that was part of the training. But I knew this room too well, so even while she was describing what she saw, I was ready when the octopus thing sprang from the corner. I knew it wasn't real, but that it would distract from an ember coming in behind us. I spun and blasted the ember away before it could reach me.
"Nice shot," Braid said.
Wow, a compliment? I was getting through to her. She led the way down to the bottom of the chamber, where, to my eyes, the exit was covered in some kind of seaweed-like substance.
"You see something here?"
she asked. "Some kind of sea growth."
"I see rocks," she grunted, "like last time."
She lowered her ship down through the hologram, and I followed, entering another metallic tunnel. I half expect Winzik to try to get us killed again, I noted as I tailed her.
Winzik is brilliant, Braid said immediately. He knows exactly what he's doing. Obviously, he understood our limits better than we did.
He got lucky, I said. His stunt out there would have looked really stupid if we'd gotten killed.
He is brilliant, Braid repeated. It's not surprising you didn't understand his purposes.
I bristled at that, but bit off a retort. Braid was making small talk. This was progress.
You grew up with Winzik? I said. Like, he was your father?
More like my keeper, she said.
And your parents? Your biological ones?
I was taken from them at age 7. Humans have to be carefully monitored. We can feed off one another's aggression, and that can quickly turn to sedition.
That must have been hard, though, leaving your parents when you were so young.
Braid didn't respond, instead leading the way down through the corridor, then into another one beneath it. I followed, frowning as the tunnel walls slowly shifted and transformed into rock ones.
This looks familiar, I thought. Stalactites, stalagmites, natural stone, looking almost melted in places from the constant dripping of water. And there, the side of an enormous metal pipe peeking through the stone? It looked like the caverns I'd explored as a youth, the endless tunnels of detritus where I'd hunted rats, imagining that I was fighting the Krell. I paused my ship near the wall, where my floods illuminated ancient etchings, patterns, words in an untranslatable language. I knew this place. Though the scale was larger, it looked exactly like a tunnel I'd traveled 100 times, a place where I would trail my fingers on the cool, wet stone. A hidden maintenance locker nearby would hold my spear gun, my map book, and the pin my father had given me. Almost unconsciously, I reached out toward the wall, though my fingers hit the glass of my canopy. I was in a ship, an alien starfighter, traveling through a deep space maze. How? How had it reached into my mind and reproduced this place? My eyes focused on the glass of my canopy. Reflected in it, as if sitting right behind me in the cockpit, were a pair of burning white spots as large as my fists, holes puncturing reality itself, sucking in everything and crushing it into a pair of impossibly white tunnels. They looked like eyes. The hair on my neck rose. I opened my mouth to shout, but the eyes vanished, and along with them, the changes to the tunnel. In an instant, I was back in just another metallic corridor, one of 1,000 in this maze.
Hey, Braid said in my ear, you coming or not?
I twisted and looked over my shoulder, but saw only the back part of my cockpit, a cushioned wall affixed with an emergency blanket, flashlight, and medical kit.
Alanik? Braid asked. There's something over here. Come tell me what you see.
Coming, I said, hands trembling as I put them back on the controls.
Scud. Scud, 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 scud. I felt alone, small. I had nobody to talk to about this.
Cobb and my friends were trillions of kilometers away, and even Embot was cut off from me until I returned to Starsight. Dared I mention my vision to Braid? That had been no simple Delver Maze hologram. That had been from my own memories. Would she think I was crazy? Worse, would she think I was one of them? Was I seeing these things because some part of a Delver had attached itself to my soul? My controls went crazy as I reached the end of the tunnel. They said I had hit a patch of artificial gravity and, even more strangely, had entered atmosphere. This ship barely had any wings, but it still deployed ailerons for steering, and the atmospheric scoop powered on to help me make high-speed turns. Just ahead, Braid had stopped her ship.
What do your sensors read? She asked.
Atmosphere, I said. Nitrogen, oxygen. Braid boosted forward a little, entering a large chamber that looked like it had a mossy floor. You see that moss?
I asked.
Yeah,
she said, then let loose with her destructors. An explosion flared yellow-orange on the side of the chamber, blasting off flaming bits of metal. I felt the shockwave from it, my ship trembling.
What?
I asked.
Why did you shoot?
Those blasts made fire that burned, instead of being smothered in the vacuum, Braid said, and I heard it. We've passed through an invisible shield and entered a pocket of atmosphere.
Alarmingly, she popped the canopy on her ship.
Braid, I yelled.
Relax, she replied. Pilots reported rooms like this near the heart.
She lowered her ship down, landing on the mossy surface. Then she climbed out and dropped to the ground. I eased my ship into the chamber. After all the tricks we'd been through in this place, she was willing to just climb out? True, she had her helmet on, and her flight suit would double as a pressure suit, but still.
The membrane should be here somewhere, she said. Come help me look.
Nervous, I settled my ship down next to hers. I checked my console and was relieved to find that the pressure differential was minimal, so I popped my canopy. I unstrapped, trailing Braid's form with my eyes as she poked along the ground. Finally, I climbed out onto the ground, my feet scraping on the moss. It was real, no hologram. I carefully picked my way over to Braid, who pulled off her helmet and looked around the dark chamber, lit by the floods from our fighters.
Braid, I said, hitting the microphone that would project my voice out of my helmet. What if it's a trap?
It's not, she said.
We've found the heart. This is the whole point of the maze.
We got here so quickly, though. Only like, what, three rooms?
It moves around, Braid said, examining the cavern. They must have simulated that when fabricating this maze.
I stepped closer to her. I'm not convinced this maze was fabricated.
The humans.
I know where the superiority says they got it, I said, cutting her off. And most of me believes their story. But I don't think the humans fabricated this. It's too, what, eerie? Too hauntingly surreal? It shows me real hallucinations. It's not a fabrication, not completely. I think it must be a corpse, I said. A Delver's corpse, repurposed to train on. Braid frowned at that.
I don't know if they can even die, Alanik. You're making assumptions.
Maybe she was right. Still, I kept my helmet on as we scouted through the cavern, sticking close together. The moss on those rocks was alive, as best as I could tell from picking at it. What if it released, like, dangerous spores or something? I would have felt a lot more comfortable if Braid would put her helmet back on. As we reached the far side of the room, I spotted something on the floor. A web of deep green, hidden behind a pile of rocks. I waved Braid forward and approached the patch. It looked like a spider web of green fibers and was about a meter in diameter, circular. You see this? I asked.
A membrane, she said, made of green fibers.
So it wasn't a hallucination. I knelt, poking at the fibers, then looked at Braid. She didn't seem eager to push through it, and I found that neither was I.
I was furious,
Braid finally said, speaking in a soft voice. Huh? I asked.
You asked earlier, she said, what it felt like to be taken from my parents when young. It made me angry.
She knelt, yanking at the spider web of fibers, pulling it back and revealing a hole in the ground. It looked to be about 2 meters deep, and the light on my helmet showed a metal floor at the bottom.
It seethed inside me for years, Braid continued, a molten pit, burning like destructor fire.
She looked back at me.
That's when I realized the superiority was right. I was dangerous. Very, very dangerous.
She met my eyes for a moment, then pulled on her helmet again and activated the channel to call into flight command.
We've found the heart, she said. Entering now.
She lowered herself down through the opening. I hesitated only a moment, then climbed down after her. My heart began beating faster, but our headlights showed only a small, empty chamber with a very low ceiling.
"Well done," Winzik's voice said in our ears. "Alanik of the Urdale and Braid Shimabukoro, you are the 7th pair to reach this room in the training."
"What happens now?" I asked. "I mean, if we were in a real Delver maze, what would we find?"
"We don't know what it will look like," Winzik said. "Nobody has ever returned after entering the membrane. But in the event of a true Delver emergency, you must detonate the weapon. The lives of millions may depend on it."
The weapon. We'd been told several times that one existed, though we had been given no details on it. We were assured that if a real Delver emergency happened, we'd each be given ships equipped with one of the weapons, which was apparently like some kind of bomb that we were supposed to detonate near the membrane room.
"Great," Braid said to Flight Command. "Now that we've gotten here, I think we're ready. Braid out."
She leaped up and pulled herself up from the room through the hole, entering the chamber with the moss. I followed, turning off the line to Flight Command.
"Ready?" I asked her.
"Braid, we've only made it to the heart once. We need to run this mission many more times."
"To what end?" she asked. "The rooms are starting to repeat. We've seen everything this test maze can show us. We're as prepared as we're going to be."
I caught up to her. "I doubt that. There's always room for more training."
"And if this fake maze makes us grow complacent, the real thing will be unexpected. Insane, or at least beyond our kind of sanity. If we just run through these same rooms, we'll get too comfortable with them. So the more we train, the worse off we could be."
Once we reached our ships, I hesitated, thinking of what she'd said earlier about being angry. Then, after a moment of indecision, I pulled off my helmet. I didn't want to risk my microphone picking up what I was going to say, just in case. Braid had been about to haul herself onto her ship's wing, but stopped when she saw me. She cocked her head, then pulled off her helmet too. I put mine aside, then gestured for her to do the same.
"What?"
she asked. Again, I nearly told her. I nearly turned off my bracelet, revealed my true face. In this place of lies and shadows, I nearly exposed to her the truth. I wanted so badly to have someone to talk to, someone who might understand. "What if there were a way to change things?" I said instead. "A way we could make it so humans didn't need to be treated like you are, to show the superiority they're wrong about you." She cocked her head and drew her lips together in a Dione sort of expression.
"That's the thing," she said. "They aren't wrong."
"What was done to you was unnatural, Braid. You were right to feel angry about it." She grabbed her helmet and put it on, then climbed up into her cockpit. I sighed, but did the same. So my helmet was back on when I caught what she said next.
"Flight Command," Braid said. "We've reached the center, so I'm going to test the weapon now."
"Affirmative," Winzik said.
"Wait,
what?"
"Braid," I said, looking across at her cockpit. "I'm not even strapped into my—" She pushed a button on her console, and a flash burst from the center of her ship. It hit me like an invisible wave, connecting not with my body, but with my mind. In that moment, I immediately knew the way home. Chapter 31. I knew the way home. I saw it, the pathway to Detritus, as clearly as I could remember the way to the hidden cavern where I'd found Embot. As clearly as I remembered that day when my father had flown for the last time against the Krell. It was burned into my brain, like an arrow made from light. I knew somehow, not just the direction, but the destination. My home. This weapon, the secret one created to fight the Delvers, was not what I'd assumed it to be.
"Weapon test successful," Braid said. "If this were a real Delver,
I am 100% confident this would have diverted them to the human refuge of Detritus.
I heard, in the background, cheers and congratulations. I heard Winzik telling the other government officials that their anti-Delver system was operational and their pilots perfectly trained. He ended with a simple, stunning conclusion.
If a Delver did ever attack the superiority, my program ensures that we will be able to send them to destroy the humans instead. We will fight the two greatest threats to the universe by turning them against one another.
The terrible understanding loomed over me. I threw off my helmet and leaped out of my cockpit, crossing the spongy ground toward Braid's ship. When I arrived, I found her lounging on the wing, her helmet off and beside her.
You knew about this? I demanded of her.
Of course I knew, she replied. Winzik's scientist used my mind to develop the weapon. We've always known that there was a connection between Cytonics and the Delvers. We cause them pain, Alanik. They hate us, maybe even fear us. We tried for years to exploit this, and came to the logical conclusion. If we can't destroy Delvers, we can at least divert them.
That's not a good solution. At best, it delays a catastrophe. It doesn't stop one.
It can, if we play this right, Braid said. We don't need to defeat the Delvers. We simply need to control them.
This isn't controlling them, I snapped. A single, barely tested blast that might divert them away?
What happens when they come back? What happens after they destroy your target, then continue to rampage across the galaxy? I was growing so used to the way Dione's and Krell responded to outbursts like this that a part of me was surprised when Braid just smiled, instead of pulling back and chiding me for my aggression.
You act as if Winzik hasn't thought about any of that, she said.
Considering my experiences with him and his military tests, I think I'm allowed to question his foresight.
Don't worry, Alanik, Braid said. She nodded toward her ship. Today's test was a way to show off for the officials back on the weights and measures. This isn't the first time we've tested the weapon. We've been planning this for years. We know that we can handle a Delver.
She slipped off her wing, her boots scraping the mossy rock beneath her as she landed. She stepped closer to me.
This training program and all of these pilots are an insurance policy. Their job will be to use diversionary bombs to shuffle a Delver around between locations until the real weapon gets there.
Which is? She pointed at herself. Then she pointed at me.
In joining these flights, you provided us with a gift. Another Cytonic. We have so few. Winzik told me to befriend you, recruit you. So here we are.
Recruit me? This whole time, Braid had been trying to recruit me? Was that why she'd been warming up to me lately? Scud. She was as bad at this as I was.
This is insane, Braid, I said. The humans tried to control the Delvers, and look where it got them.
We've learned from their mistakes, Braid said. If you are willing, I can show you things about your powers. Things you never dreamed were possible. We can control the Delvers.
Are you sure? I asked. Are you really sure?
She hesitated, and I saw that she wasn't, even though she made a Dione gesture of assurance by raising her hand and tapping two of her fingers together. The chinks in her armor were there. She wasn't nearly as confident as she pretended.
We should talk about this, I said. Not be so hasty. Maybe, Braid said. Maybe there isn't time, though.
Braid turned back to her ship.
The superiority is losing its stranglehold on travel. Others are close to figuring out its technology. Something new is needed. Something to keep everyone in line and prevent wars.
The horror of it hit me. The Delvers. You'll have them looming over everyone. A threat.
Obey. Play along, or we'll send one to your doorstep.
Just think about the offer, Alanik. Braid put on her helmet.
We're pretty sure we can handle keeping a Delver distracted when it's in our realm. In the past, they'd sometimes spend years between attacks floating in space, doing whatever it is they do. So if our force can be ready when one approaches a populated planet, it should be safe enough, particularly with Cytonics like us as a backup. Winzik can explain it better than I can. He's a genius. Anyway, we should get back.
She slid into her cockpit. I stood in stunned silence for a moment longer, trying to wrap my brain around everything she'd told me. Whatever they said they'd practiced, whatever assurances they thought they had, they were wrong. I'd felt the Delvers. Winzik and his team were like children playing with an armed bomb. But as I walked back to my ship, I had to admit that a small portion of me was tempted. How much did Braid know about my powers? What could she show me? I had played along with joining the Superiority's military to get access to hyperdrives. Could I play along with this offer to learn what Braid knew? Too far, I thought as I climbed back into my ship. No, I wanted nothing to do with the Delvers. Though it was unrealistic, I never wanted to feel their eyes on me again. I never wanted to feel their thoughts intruding on mine, making everything and everyone seem so insignificant. Whatever Braid and Winzik were up to, I couldn't join it. I had to find a way to stop it. Braid, I said as we got back on the comms. Don't you care at all that they're planning to use this to destroy an entire planet of humans? Your people? She didn't respond immediately. And when she did, I thought I heard a hesitance to her. They deserve it. It's what has to be. Yes, there were obviously cracks in her confidence, but how could I exploit them? The two of us flew out of the maze, then headed to join the rest of our flight. However, we got a call from the weights and measures before we arrived. You too, the official said. Alanik of Erdale and the human. Report in early. I felt an immediate surge of panic. Was this more of Winzik trying to recruit me, or was it about my spy drone? In the face of the overwhelming discoveries that Braid had dropped on me, I had almost forgotten about my plan and the little robot that was hiding back on the weights and measures. I looked out into the stars. I didn't need coordinates to try to judge the direction to Detritus. I could feel it out there. The pathway burned into my head. It was fading, like the path to Starsight that Alanik had put in my head, but much more slowly. I felt I'd have this arrow for days at least. She'd been weak, near death. That was why her coordinates had faded so quickly. This was a more powerful impression. I could go. I could jump home right now. I was free. But Embot and Doomslug were back at the embassy. No, I still had a mission here. It wasn't time to leave yet, not quite. Winzik can't have discovered the drone, I told myself, shoving down my earlier anxiety. Why would they call us both back in that case? Why would they call me back at all? If they suspected me, they'd start shooting, right? I then turned my ship toward the weights and measures, which seemed like a small rock compared to the dominating polyhedral boulder that was the Delver maze. As soon as I drew close enough to the carrier, my wristband buzzed, indicating that I'd reestablished communication with the drone. Status? I sent to it, tapping on the bracelet. Have infiltrated engine room, it sent back. Am hovering in a corner, good visibility. Algorithms determine a very low chance of discovery. Continue or return to meeting point? Seen anything interesting? Not capable of answering that question, but my chronometer indicates I arrived after hyperjump occurred. I'd want it to stay in place at least until we hyperjumped back to Starsight. That would give me the best chance of capturing sensitive information. Remain, I sent. I landed behind Braid in the fighter bays and handed off my ship to the maintenance crew. I caught up with her as she climbed down from her ship. Any idea what this is about? I asked. Is it about recruiting me?
Braid gave a non-committal swipe of her fingers, a Dione gesture. We were met by a guide drone, which led us away from the fighter bay, down an unfamiliar, red-carpeted path through the weights and measures. Irrationally, I felt like I was being walked to a cell, right up until the moment when we stepped through a set of double doors and entered a party. Krell and Dione's in official uniforms or robes stood about, sipping fancy drinks. A large screen on the far wall showed shots of training fighters, alternating with slides of text that explained the philosophy behind our training. From the little bits my translator read to me, it looked like the Department of Protective Services was making great efforts to prove how important their project was. Indeed, I noted other pilots from other flights standing throughout the room, speaking with officials. I'd been called in to be used for propaganda purposes, it seemed. Soon, Winzik gestured me over to stand by him, though the drone instructed Braid to wait behind. Winzik was in good spirits, judging by the excited way he waved the arms of his green exoskeleton. Ah, here she is, the only one of her species on Starsight. And now she serves in my program, proof that it has merit indeed. The two Krell he was speaking to looked me over. Ah, one said. Your people once served the humans, did they not? How do you feel at finally being invited to join the superiority? Honored, I forced myself to say. Scud, did this have to happen today? Now that I wasn't actively fighting, my worry about the spy drone was growing nearly unbearable. I'm more interested in your human, Winzik, the other Krell said. Has she killed anyone by accident?
My, no. She's very well-trained. Let us focus on my project, Your Honors. A reasonable plan for protecting against the Delvers, at long last.
That, a voice said from over my shoulder, and the Superiority's first actively piloted space force in 100 years, one composed entirely of lesser species at that. I spun and found Kuna there behind me. Even in a room of diplomats and politicians, Kuna stood out, tall, with deep blue skin, shrouded in robes such a dark violet they were nearly black.
It's not completely made up of lesser species, Winzik admitted. We've got one Dione, a draft, strangely.
Still, an incredible undertaking, Kuna said. That leaves me wondering at the Department of Protective Services and its ambitions for this force it is training. I could practically feel the tension between Kuna and Winzik. The other officials did the Krell equivalent of clearing their throats, making a crossing gesture before withdrawing. That left just me, Winzik, and Kuna. The two didn't speak. They only stared at each other. Finally, Winzik turned around without a word and responded to someone speaking nearby. The cheery Krell walked over and jumped right into that conversation, explaining enthusiastically about his plan to defend against the Delvers. How much does Kuna know? I wondered. Kuna was the one to invite Alenik here, a Cytonic. They must suspect what Winzik is doing, but how much can I trust either of them? I don't know what any of this means, I said to Kuna, but I'm not interested in your political games.
Unfortunately, Alenik, the game takes no care for your interest. It plays you either way.
Did you know about the weapon? I asked. Did you know its real purpose? To send the Delvers out to attack other planets?
I suspected, Kuna said. Now I have confirmation. There are things I must tell you, but we can't talk here. I will send for you back on Starsight. For once, kindly respond to me. There is little time remaining.
They gave me one of their evil smiles, the ones that made me shiver all the way through. Hadn't it been Kuna who told me that the humans had fallen because they tried to weaponize the Delvers? What did they think about Winzik and the Superiority trying basically the same thing? Kuna turned to leave, and I reached for them, intending to demand answers now. Unfortunately, I was interrupted by shouting from the side of the room.
I will not, Braid snapped, her voice carrying. You shouldn't want a picture with a monster anyway.
She threw her cup of something colorful at the wall, splashing liquid all over, then stalked out of the room.
Scud. I darted after her, leaving the party behind. Belatedly, the drone that had led us there followed.
I caught up to Braid at the first intersection, where she paused, obviously not knowing which way to go. Several guards nearby eyed us distrustfully. There seemed to be even more security in the hallways than usual, probably because of all the visiting dignitaries.
What's wrong? I asked her. I'm wrong, she snapped. And they're all wrong. I'm not some freak to gawk at.
I grimaced. Though I could understand the sentiment, she probably hadn't done much to improve the reputation of humans among that crowd.
If you'll come this way, the drone operator said, I've been given permission to lead you to your transport room to wait for the rest of the pilots.
It started off down the hallway and we followed, passing a few windows that looked out at the stars. At times, it was hard for me to remember we were on board a ship, silly as that sounded. The DDF didn't have anything larger than a small troop transport. Ships of this size, with entire ballrooms in them, were completely outside my experience. I hurried alongside Braid, searching for something to say.
I know of a place, I whispered to her. Where nobody would look at you like a freak. Where nobody would stare.
Where? She snapped. Your home world? Alanique, I know about your people. Mine conquered them. I wouldn't just be a freak there. I'd be hated.
No, I said, taking her by the arm, stopping her in the empty hallway.
There seemed to be fewer patrols in this section of the ship than there normally were. Some of the guards had been moved up by the ballroom, and our guide drone was pretty far ahead.
Braid, I whispered. I can tell you have reservations about this plan.
She didn't respond, but she met my eyes.
There are things I can't tell you right now, I said. But I promise you, I can take you somewhere you'll be appreciated. Not hated, not feared, celebrated. I'll explain soon. I just want you to listen when I do, all right?
Braid frowned in a very human way. She might have picked up some Krell and Dione mannerisms, but she'd been raised, at least as a child, by human parents. The guide drone called to us, and so I let go of Braid and we hurried to catch up. We passed the hallway leading to engineering. There was still a guard posted at the intersection, unfortunately, and continued to our jump room. I stewed for what felt like hours, but was probably about half of one, then smelled a distinctive cinnamon scent.
Are you too well? Vapor asked. Flight Command said they'd called you back, but wouldn't tell me why. To them, I don't have any real authority.
We're fine, I said, glancing toward Braid, who had taken her customary seat in the last row, where she sat staring at the wall. Winzik just wanted to show off some of his pilots. The Kitson and Mormer entered a short time later.
Alanique, Kauri said, flying the platform to me. You reached the heart.
What was it like? Hesho asked from his throne. Bright, like a thousand sunrises experienced all at once. Dark, like the gloom of a cavern that has never seen the sky.
Neither, I said. It was an empty room, Hesho. They don't know what's at the center of a real maze, so they couldn't imitate it.
How disappointing, he said. That's not poetic at all.
I heard, Mormer said, that the High Minister of the Superiority was here today, in person. Did you see them?
I don't know, I said. I wouldn't recognize them if I did. Aya, one of the Kitson gunners, launched into a story about how she'd caught a glimpse of the High Minister when touring Starsight. Hesho looked pointedly unimpressed. But, well, he had been a king, so maybe High Ministers were boring to him. I was content to let the others talk, settling down in my seat and tapping covertly on my bracelet.
Status?
Waiting and observing, the drone sent. There is movement of personnel. Based on dialogue, I believe we will soon hyperjump. Right. It was time then. I just had to hope that the drone would be able to record something.
I sank down into myself, pretended I was flying. I immediately saw the path home, but turned away from that. Not now, not yet. I tried to reach toward this ship, the weights and measures. I tried to hear what was being said on board. It shouldn't work. There was no reason for them to use psionic communication to talk to other places on board the ship. And yet, voices from engineering popped into my head. It felt like someone was relaying them to me. Like someone was hearing them, then projecting them.
"All pilots are on board and personnel secured," Winzik's voice said. "Engineering, you may proceed with the hyperjump back to Starsight Regional Space."
"Understood,"
an engineer said back. I could even hear the Dione accent.
"Preparing for hyperjump."
Near them was a mind. Not a person, though, something else. It was relaying these words. Maybe I could help make certain the drone had something to record. My presence here on the ship had interfered before with the hyperjumps. Could I make that happen on purpose? Force the crew to swap hyperdrives? I pressed softly against the mind I'd found. I heard a sharp cry.
"Hyperdrive malfunction," engineering said. "Bridge, we have another hyperdrive malfunction. It's those psionics on board. They're creating an unconscious interference with the hyperdrives."
"Try a replacement," the bridge said.
"Loading one now. Can we do something about this? It causes so much paperwork."
I snapped back to myself. Whatever they did worked, for we soon entered the nowhere again. Another scream, another lurch as I was cast into that place of darkness, punctured by the Delver eyes. As usual, they had turned from us and were looking toward the sound of the scream. Was this how the diversionary bomb worked? Superiority hyperdrives could distract the Delvers, divert their attention. Perhaps the Superiority had advanced this technology to create the device that Braid had activated. I studied the Delvers, who more and more were looking like tunnels of white light. A prickling sensation washed through me. I knew, without needing to look, that I'd been seen. One of the Delvers, perhaps the same one as last time, wasn't distracted by the scream. I turned and found it right beside me. I could feel its emotions, hateful, dismissive, angry. Sensations washed through me, and I gasped. To the Delver, life in my universe was nothing more than a bunch of angry gnats. Somehow it knew I was more. It loomed over me, surrounding me, overwhelming me. I was going to die. I was going to... I slammed back into my seat on the weights and measures. Aya was still telling her story to a rapt audience. I curled up on my seat, sweating, rattled. I'd never felt so small, so alone. I trembled, trying to banish the unexpected emotion. I couldn't tell if it belonged to me or was a side effect of having seen that Delver. But loneliness swallowed me. It was even worse than when I'd been on Detritus training, living in my little cave, sleeping in a cockpit while the rest of my flight ate and laughed together. Then, at least, I'd had an enemy to fight. Then I'd had the support and friendship of the others, even if I was forced to scavenge for food. Here, I sat in an enemy battleship, surrounded by people I'd been lying to. I thought of Hesho and Morimer as my friends, but they would kill me in a heartbeat if they knew what I was. "Status update," the drone suddenly sent, the words tapping out on my wrist. "It is probable I have been detected." A set of warning alarms suddenly rang through the ship. Aya, the Kitson, cut off, and the rest of my flight stood up, shocked by the sudden sound.
"What?" I typed to the drone. "Explain!"
Before I could exit the engine room, I tripped some sort of alarm, the drone sent. "Multiple engineers search. I have not escaped into the hallway. I will soon be discovered." Scud.
Though we'd tried to remove any identifying features on the drone parts, MBOT had little doubt that the device, if detected, could be traced back to Alanik.
Scud, 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 scud.
Orders, the drone sent to me. A plan popped into my mind. A terrible plan, but it was the only thing I could come up with while under so much pressure. Able to reach destructor pistol strapped to you? Yes, service arms can reach weapon. Turn off safety, I sent. Remove tape. Hold pistol in front of you. Start pulling trigger. Chapter 32. I expected an argument. MBOT would have argued. But this drone wasn't him. It wasn't a true AI, and so could follow my instructions without thinking of the implications. We felt the series of blasts, small though they were, from our room. The other pilots began to murmur nervously. Keep shooting, I sent to the drone. Avoid being destroyed. Affirmative. The warning sirens turned frantic, and a voice piped over the PA, reverberating outside our jump room as well. There are hostile forces in engineering. Number unknown, but they're firing. Another set of blasts sounded from nearby. Here we go, I thought. We're under attack, I shouted to the other pilots. I leaped from my seat, swinging my pack onto my shoulder. We need to go help, I said, throwing open the door, and scrambled out into the hallway. Though Mormer sat stunned in their seat, Hesho needed no other confirmation. He shouted, Kitson, to arms! A swarm of furry little warriors on hover platforms zipped out into the hallway to join me.
Wait, Vapor's voice said from the room. I'm sure that the local guards can handle this.
I ignored her, barreling down the hallway. As I'd hoped, the solitary guard at the intersection to engineering had taken cover by the wall and was calling on her comm for backup. The Kral talked tough, but the truth was, this ship's crew had probably never been in combat before. I can help, I said to the guard, but I'll need a gun. Another series of blasts sounded from down the hallway. The Krell guard looked toward them, then back at me.
I mean...
A part of me was really satisfied to see how her tough persona fell away once the shooting started. I waved my hand impatiently, and the guard took out her sidearm, a small destructor pistol, and handed it to me. Then she raised her larger rifle and nodded. Hesho, guard this hallway, I said. Don't let anything suspicious escape through it.
Order confirmed, Hesho said.
And the Kitson platforms formed up like a wall behind us. The Krell guard, to her credit, stood up and started down the hallway. She made a sharp cutting motion with her fingers, a kind of Krell version of here we go. Then we passed beneath a large sign on the wall proclaiming that we'd entered engineering. I'd spent weeks trying to figure out a way to get down here, and I followed the guard with a rising sense of excitement. We turned down another hallway, and I was hit with the scent of lemons. Maybe a cleaning crew had been through recently? On the wall was a sign, no non-essential personnel allowed. Security clearance 1B required. The blasts were coming from a door a little farther down, but the guard stopped and turned to me. You aren't allowed in the room, she told me. It's against clearance rules. Is that more important than protecting the engineering crew? The guard actually gave it some thought, then said, We should wait. Security details are up on deck 4 for special duty, but they should be here soon. All we need to do is make sure that whoever is in there doesn't escape. I tried to go ahead, but the guard gave me a firm gesture of forbiddance, palm out. So I settled down by the wall, holding my pistol. I set my pack on the ground. My mind was racing. How did I get the drone out of this? Any second now, this hall would flood with security guards. Status? I asked the drone, tapping covertly on my bracelet. Scientists hide, the drone said. None return fire. I scanned the hallway. On my mark, fly out into hall. Fire 2 shots up high and don't hit anyone. Then drop gun. Affirmative.
Backpack is by wall. Quickly hide inside after dropping gun.
Instructions understood. Right. I took a deep breath, then sent,
go.
Immediately, the drone, visible only as a shimmer in the air, floated out into the hallway. It fired the destructor overhead, sending the guard to the ground with a cry of fear.
It's coming for us, I shouted.
Then, right as the drone dropped the gun, I fired. I'd done some time in the firing ranges, but had never thought that so much would ride on being able to hit a moving target with a pistol. My first three shots missed, but I managed to hit the gun right before it hit the ground. The subsequent explosion was impressively large, sending out sparks and molten bits of metal. My shot detonated the pistol's power supply. As the loud explosion washed over us, light flashing and blinding me, I dove for the Krell guard as if to shield her from the blast. The two of us ended up in a pile on the floor. I blinked, trying to dispel the spots the bright flash had caused in my vision. Judging by how stunned the guard looked, she had suffered something similar. Eventually, she shoved me off and scrambled to her feet.
What happened?
A drone, I said, pointing toward a scorched portion of the carpet. I shot it down. There was no sign of the drone itself, but the destroyed pistol had left scattered debris. Klaxons continued to go off, but the absence of further shots made the guard cautiously creep forward and inspect the burned ground.
Get back to your transport room, she said.
I was all too happy to do so, snatching up my backpack, which I was relieved to find heavy with the weight of the drone. The guard peeked into the engine room to check on those inside, then thought to call to me.
Leave the gun!
I dropped the pistol by the wall, then met up with Hesho right as a troop of six guards tromped past. One of them, a Dione, hollered for us to get back into our room,